Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. My name is Jan Emerson Shea. I'm with the California Hospital Association. I oversee media relations and public affairs for the association. It's my pleasure to welcome you all to this morning's audio press conference, where we will be discussing the severe financial challenges that are facing hospitals throughout California and particularly in the Bay Area as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. And a request that we have made to the governor and the legislature to provide hospitals with some immediate financial assistance. I'd first like to introduce our first speaker, Carmela Coyle, who is the president and CEO of the California Hospital Association. Carmela?
Thank you very much, Jan, and thanks to all of you for joining us during what we know is a busy news cycle. These are, of course, unprecedented times. None of us have been through anything like this in terms of this virus, our health, the death toll, the isolation, the economic downturn, and all of the rest. And so it is these unprecedented times that call for unprecedented actions, and that is our purpose today. California's hospitals answered the call. As always, California hospitals have been and are there to treat those who have been sickened by this COVID virus. Governor Newsom has and continues to provide outstanding leadership in this crisis, and California's hospitals were asked to be there and to be prepared. We were asked to prepare to surge 40%, that is, to be able to treat 40% more patients than we otherwise would. And then we were asked by the governor to surge, to be able to surge to 50%, to treat 50% more patients than we otherwise would. So to make way for tens of thousands of potentially ill COVID patients all at once. And California's hospitals did just that. We were asked to meet that moment, and we did so, and we did so proudly. We emptied California's hospitals to make way. We canceled surgeries, procedures, and more. And we did that because it is the right thing to do. We were, all of us, in this state, standing shoulder to shoulder in preparation for a pandemic the likes of which none of us has seen in our lifetime. But meeting that moment to address the COVID outbreak has come at a devastating loss and risk for California's hospitals. Emergency department visits in the state are down 50%. Revenue losses for hospitals alone are averaging between 20 and 30%, with some hospitals experiencing even greater losses. Some of our small and more rural hospitals in the 50 to 60% range, as when they begin to cancel surgeries and procedures, it really is the bulk of their revenue coming in. That translates into short-term losses for California's hospitals in the range of $10 to $14 billion. Add to that the expense to be COVID prepared, the construction, the purchasing of ventilators, personal protective equipment, standing up alternate care sites. So the immediate impact, $10 to $14 billion. But what's also happening is we have damaged the long-term financial strength of California's hospitals, not just their liquidity, but their ability to borrow, their ability to undertake capital projects in the future, and to do so borrowing money and doing that at a reasonable rate. This will have very long-term implications for the hospital and health system field. So California's hospitals need an immediate lifeline, and that is an immediate lifeline of state financial support. Hospitals have asked the governor for $1 billion before the end of June, that is before June 30th, that is the end of the current state budget year, and we are asking for a united commitment in the coming budget year to call for more federal matching aid. Hospitals have been doing their best in this environment, and like other businesses, there have been significant revenue losses, whether that's restaurants or movie theaters or retail stores. Everyone has sustained losses. The challenges for hospitals is while others were able to turn out the lights and close the door, we remained open, and not just open, but open, ready, fully staffed. but these challenges have now put hospitals in a position where the revenue losses just can't be sustained. We are now seeing hospitals having to resort to layoffs and furloughs and asking employees to take paid time off. This will impact the services that hospitals can provide, and again, adding to that long-term stress on the financial strength of hospitals. What you may not know is for a typical hospital, about 60% of its costs are for labor. Hospitals are all about people taking care of people. Another 15% of a typical hospital's costs are for the supplies needed to provide care. So when we are dealing with this financial crisis for California's hospitals, there are few choices, and honestly, there are no good choices. So we're asking for this immediate cash lifeline, and doing so because it's really critical to all of us, not just to hospitals, but to every Californian. And that is because hospitals are the key to safely reopening California's economy. As you know, the governor has laid out a series of steps or metrics to reopen the state, but we cannot meet any of those unless hospitals are open, available, and staffed. We are being asked to be prepared to deal with a rise in COVID-positive patients, which we all expect as we begin to mix and intermingle, and also to prepare for a resurgence, which is what many scientists and clinicians expect we will be seeing late into the year and into the next year. So if hospitals can't remain strong and solvent, we are all in jeopardy when COVID rises and resurges. California's confidence in daily life really can't be restored unless hospitals are funded, stable, and operational. So their financial strength is critical to all of us in a reopening of the economy. And speaking of the economy, hospitals employ 500,000 people in the state of California. We support 1.2 million jobs. It is better if we are in a position where we can keep these jobs. These are solid middle-class jobs with benefits, rather than having to resort to layoffs and furloughs and all of the rest. We can be key to energizing and restarting this California economy, and that is why we have asked for this state lifeline. So with that, let me please turn the call back to Jan Emerson Shea.
Thank you, Carmela. I'd now like to introduce Dr. David Klein, who serves as the CEO of two of San Francisco's longest operating hospitals, St. Mary's Medical Center and St. Francis Memorial Hospital. Both facilities are part of the nonprofit Dignity Health System.
Great. Thank you, Jan. Yes, good. Thank you so much, and good morning, everybody. I think I'd like to first start out and remind everybody, I think you know it's Hospital Week, and I wanted just to take a quick moment to really thank the heroes I see working in our hospitals every day. I'm really honored to call them colleagues, and I am so grateful to them for stepping up to take care of our community, not just during a crisis, but at all times. I also would like to applaud San Francisco Mayor London Breed as well and the San Francisco Department of Public Health for taking proactive steps to prevent the spread of COVID-19. It was their quick work and the quick work of the caregivers in the community and forward thinking of our city leaders that really has helped us to flatten the curve and prevent to some extent the anticipated surge. Although we know that anything can happen in the future, I think the city serves as a model of appropriate care in this pandemic. You know, in San Francisco, we really do have a strong consortium of hospitals, and the Hospital Council, of which I have the privilege to serve as a chair, is extremely collaborative, and there's really never been a more important time for the hospitals to work together. And I'm so grateful that here in San Francisco, our many health systems have had a very long history of partnering to keep San Franciscans healthy. It really has shown. Dignity Health was especially proud to partner with UCSF Health, Zuckerberg, San Francisco General, and the public health departments to be able to open the city's first and only dedicated COVID unit, which we opened up in early April. Together, we worked to quickly repurpose this existing unit at St. Francis Memorial Hospital and to provide the necessary equipment, the significant PPE, and, of course, the staff to run it. This was an important move on our behalf with our partners to make sure that we have that needed coverage in the city. We also repurposed similar space and St. Mary's, although we haven't pressed that into service. We did make the necessary changes in construction, et cetera, and acquire the equipment needed to prepare for a surge in case we were to see it. Fortunately, we haven't had to use that unit, but we continue to see many patients in St. Francis' dedicated COVID unit every day. And although the pandemic is really not over, this collaboration has really helped us to stay ahead of any surge and to help our community and other hospitals in the area. So both of these examples are ways that we have really stepped up, changed our operation, changed our service lines to meet this demand. Obviously, this has come at a significant impact on our finances, as Carmela mentioned. Our first priority has always been to ensure that we're ready and able to provide care our community desperately needs. As a nonprofit mission-based organization with one of our hospitals, that being St. Francis, located in the Tenderloin, we really do have a particular focus on supporting disadvantaged communities for whom the social determinants of health have a significant impact. These priorities have directly informed our response and have impacted our finance accordingly and to a major extent. Like hospitals across the state and in our community and even the country, we did suspend elective procedure. We closed elective procedures, elective surgeries. We closed many of our outpatient clinics, and I think everybody knows that those are the areas with which the hospitals make up most of our revenue. And even as we look towards resuming elective procedures gradually and safely, we continue to see our volumes fall in our emergency rooms and in the hospitals. Patients prefer to avoid care facilities unless it's absolutely necessary. And it's likely going to take us quite a while, many months, to get our volumes back up to an appropriate level and even to see where we were pre-COVID. And we need to be prepared for another possible surge so that if that were to happen, we would have to, again, curtail surgery and procedures as we did before to prepare to care for our community, which could create, again, more significant impacts on our revenue opportunities. Overall, at our two city hospitals, our volumes are down more than 50% and greater in some of our specific areas at each of the hospitals. And as you would expect, our revenue is down accordingly, and it's a big number. We have already had to furlough and flex a number of our employees due to these unprecedented low volumes. As Carmela mentioned, salaries are our largest expenditure, and we have had to flex, as I said, many employees at both of our organizations here in the city. Clearly, support's needed, and that has to include state funding. Our hospitals will need significant financial support in order for us to sustain the services that we perform for the community. And although we're really grateful for the funding that we've received so far, it unfortunately does not come close at all to bridging the gap that we're experiencing. Without adequate funding, it's going to be very difficult for the hospitals to fully recover financially from this pandemic, and we will again be in a very weak position, a much weaker position if and most likely when we face something like this again, and we really do need to maintain the strengths of our community hospitals. Dignity Health Hospitals provide very vital services in San Francisco, including where we have the only adolescent psychiatric unit in the city. We have the largest burn unit in Northern California, and we have one of the few acute inpatient behavioral health units, which is focused on patients suffering from homelessness and substance use disorder. And we have seen actually cases of COVID in all these populations. We must be able to maintain these most important programs in addition to all the other healthcare services that we provide to our community. We absolutely must be able to continue in these areas and provide the care to all levels of our population. It is critically important that our hospitals are adequately funded and stand ready to take care of our community in any public healthcare crisis, such as the pandemic that we are all experiencing currently. So with that, I would thank you, and Jan, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Klein. Now I'd like to introduce our final speaker for this morning, Delvecchio Finley, the CEO of Alameda Health System, which is an integrated public health care system that has been serving the East Bay since 1864. Delvecchio?
Thank you, Jan, and good morning to everyone. It is my extreme privilege and honor to join you on today's call to be able to echo the sentiments of my colleague, Dr. Klein, and others, but also to speak on behalf of the dedicated essential workers and, as Dr. Klein aptly described, healthcare heroes serve our communities through our organizations day in and day out, and especially during this unprecedented pandemic, as Carmela mentioned. So Alameda Health System is an integrated delivery system. We provide outpatient, emergency, and acute medical services, as well as psychiatric services. We are the only level one trauma center in the East Bay, including not only Alameda County, but Contra Costa County and others, getting up to Sacramento and the Davis area. We have acute rehab and skilled nursing, and we are the only psychiatric emergency service in the county, and we participate and provide a substantial amount of the inpatient psychiatric services in Alameda County. We are incredibly proud to have partnered with our fellow hospital providers throughout the county, as well as clinic partners and our public health and civic leaders as well, to ensure that we met the immediate COVID-19 care needs in our community while also preparing to deal with the anticipated surge. We also are immensely pleased that some of the public safety measures seem to have helped us to flatten the curve as far as our current experience has been, and hope to sustain that as we go forward. But as I mentioned, as essential workers, our doctors, our nurses, therapists, housekeepers, food service workers, engineers, and countless other staff have continued to show up each day to serve our community throughout this pandemic and the shelter-in-place orders. All across Alameda Health System, we took several steps to respond to the pandemic. We, like many of our other peers, we converted some physical spaces. We turned in our flagship Level 1 Trauma Center at Highland Hospital, converted two of our med-surg floors to all negative pressure rooms, which are ideally suited to care for patients with respiratory illnesses. We staged a lot of our excess beds and cots in flex spaces throughout our facility, so non-traditional clinical spaces. They were ambulatory spaces where we were prepared for accepting an additional onslaught of patients who may need care. We, like many other places, established triage tents and created physical separations throughout our waiting areas and internal diagnostic spaces in the organization. As Dr. Klein mentioned, we, too, had a significant drop in our OR and procedural cases as we suspended these procedures, ambulatory, including dental, gastroenterology, gynecology, interventional cardiology, radiology, general surgery, and orthopedic surgery. We, too, experienced significant spikes in the cost for securing PPE to support our staff, whether they were gowns, face shields, N95, and other surgical masks, disinfectant solutions, hand hygiene, gel, and other sorts of things. We had to bring on additional staff, including travelers and registry, as we were supporting some of our own staff who were experiencing some of the unintended consequences of shelter-in-place orders in terms of access to child care and family care and others' personal needs. We also, and I really want to call this forward, made substantial immediate investments in our IT infrastructure and leverage enhancements from a recent EHR integrated effort that we just underwent several months ago to support our telemedicine work and to convert as many of our outpatient visits as possible into telemedicine visits with both voice and video calls or visits with our patients. Familial connections, as the restrictions on visitations created separation between our patients and their loved ones, being able to leverage our technological platform to reestablish some of that connection, to support telemedicine visits from our providers with patients, to preserve some of our precious protective personal equipment, as well as safety for everyone. We expanded our ability to support sheltering and isolation and quarantining in our community and within our organization. In particular, really want to lift up and and express how fortunate we were to be able to partner with our county to support our homeless population, a very high-risk population. We partnered with our whole person care pilot in our county to ensure that we could reallocate resources along with them to support persons who were living without a home or who were unstably housed or who were at increased risk of contracting the virus because of their housing situation and perhaps a challenge with isolating or quarantining. The pilots were, through that, able to partner with the state and stand up local hotels to secure space for patients who had tested positive for COVID-19, who were awaiting test results or who were especially vulnerable due to either their age or comorbid conditions or need to be relocated from shelters or other encampments. You know, before we talk about the monetary impact or before we could focus on the impact, it was much more vitally important for us to understand our responsibility as first responders to support our community, but also to understand the human toll that COVID-19 has had on and been leveled upon some of our most impacted communities in terms of the low income, the homeless, and people of color, the people who largely rely on our public health safety net systems for their care. Without adequately supported public health care systems, these populations will continue to bear a disproportionate brunt of this pandemic. And so we want to do our part to ensure that we secure and solicit resources along with our partners here with CHA to be able to continue to support those communities. AHS is a part or just one example of public health care systems like ours throughout the state that provide this very important role in serving California's Medi-Cal population, the remaining uninsured, and those most vulnerable in our community. As a result of this pandemic, AHS has experienced a loss thus far of north of $20 million, and we're forecasting conservatively that number may double before this is all told. We, too, are incredibly and immensely appreciative of the support that we've gotten from the federal government and the state and others. But as Carmela mentioned, unfortunately, it has been necessary but insufficient. And so we really do join our colleagues in a request for additional investments to be made to recognize the impact that this pandemic has had on our system, both in terms of lost revenue, but costs that we've not been able to avoid in serving our role as essential workers and really responding to the call to support our communities. And I think I will pause there and certainly entertain any questions that you may have, but I'll turn it back over to you, Jan, and thanks again for the opportunity to share our story.
Thank you, DelVecchio. At this point, James, we'd like to open the call for questions from the news media.
Certainly. We will now allow questions from the phone lines. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star followed by one. If you would like to remove your question, press star followed by two. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before using the keypad. Once again, to ask a question, press star one. We will pause here briefly to allow questions to generate in queue. Our first question comes from the line of Shannon Lynn with KQED. You may proceed.
Hi, I have a question for DelVecchio. I was wondering if the Alameda Health System is considering layoffs or if they've implemented a hiring freeze cutting services because of the financial situation.
Thank you very much for the question. We are in the process, as many organizations that operate on a July-June fiscal year, we were in the mid stages of producing our budget for the next fiscal year. We rely on a very tight collaboration with our county partners in terms of recognizing the fact that as a largely Medi-Cal serving organization. We rely on supplemental resources at the county and other levels to cover the costs of our services routinely that Medi-Cal doesn't cover. So, in short, we haven't implemented anything in terms of furloughs or hiring freezes or layoffs at this point. We are obviously really hopeful that we can avoid those circumstances, but we also operate in a situation where we're seeing all around us our peers and colleagues taking these sorts of steps, and so we're talking to our board now, and we are opening dialogues with our county partners who we know are also struggling with some of the impacts of this as well, to see what we will need to do in order to weather this, and as I stated earlier, obviously as hopeful as possible that we can get additional relief and aid to mitigate this and be prepared to not just support our community on a routine basis, but support any suspected second wave that we might experience down the road here for these very critical and important workers and supporters of our community.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, press star followed by one. There are currently no questions awaiting from the phone line.
All right, then. If there are no further questions, we can wrap up today's phone call with a great deal of thanks to Carmela, Dr. Klein, and Delvecchio Finley. Thank you, and thanks to the media for joining us today in this call. Our call is completed. Thank you so much. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for attending. This now concludes the conference. Enjoy the rest of your day.